Good evening. Welcome to Washington and this VOA special report. President Barack Obama's address on Iraq, coming to you live on radio, TV, and streamed online at voanews.com. I'm Doug Bernard, and joining me here in the VOA News Center are Chief White House Correspondent Dan Robinson and Senior National Correspondent Jim Malone. Now, Mr. Obama's address, only the second such speech from the Oval Office in his 19 months in office, is coinciding with what's being called the end of formal combat mission in Iraq. But with so many issues on the president's plate, the question seems to be, what's the point of this speech and who is its audience? So, Dan Robinson, why this speech and why now?
Doug, main messages here. I fulfilled my pledge. The president is going to explain the combat role has ended, is ending. The U.S. is on a downward slope to ending and pulling out all U.S. forces by next year. It is hoped, honoring and validating the job that the troops did, the great sacrifices by Americans and Iraqis as well, and not letting Iraqis down, but sending the specific message that the future is in the hands of Iraqis. From this point on.
Of course, that's one of probably many messages the president will be addressing this evening. And now, here, the president of the United States.
Good evening. Tonight, I'd like to talk to you about the end of our combat mission in Iraq, the ongoing security challenges we face, and the need to rebuild our nation here at home. I know this historic moment comes at a time of great uncertainty for many Americans. We've now been through nearly a decade of war. We've endured a long and painful recession. And sometimes, in the midst of these storms, the future that we're trying to build for our nation, a future of lasting peace and long-term prosperity, may seem beyond our reach. But this milestone should serve as a reminder to all Americans that the future is ours to shape if we move forward with confidence and commitment. It should also serve as a message to the world that the United States of America intends to sustain and strengthen our leadership in this young century. From this desk, 7.5 years ago, President Bush announced the beginning of military operations in Iraq. Much has changed since that night. A war to disarm a state became a fight against an insurgency. Terrorism and sectarian warfare threatened to tear Iraq apart. Thousands of Americans gave their lives. Tens of thousands have been wounded. Our relations abroad were strained. Our unity at home was tested. These are the rough waters encountered during the course of one of America's longest wars. Yet there has been one constant amidst these shifting tides. At every turn, America's men and women in uniform have served with courage and resolve. As Commander-in-Chief, I am incredibly proud of their service. And like all Americans, I am awed by their sacrifice and by the sacrifices of their families. The Americans who have served in Iraq completed every mission they were given. They defeated a regime that had terrorized its people. Together with Iraqis and coalition partners who made huge sacrifices of their own, our troops fought block by block to help Iraq seize the chance for a better future. They shifted tactics to protect the Iraqi people, trained Iraqi security forces, and took out terrorist leaders. Because of our troops and civilians, and because of the resilience of the Iraqi people, Iraq has the opportunity to embrace a new destiny, even though many challenges remain. So tonight, I am announcing that the American combat mission in Iraq has ended. Operation Iraqi Freedom is over, and the Iraqi people now have lead responsibility for the security of their country. This was my pledge to the American people as a candidate for this office. Last February, I announced a plan that would bring our combat brigades out of Iraq, while redoubling our efforts to strengthen Iraq's security forces and support its government and people. That's what we've done. We've removed nearly 100,000 U.S. troops from Iraq. We've closed or transferred to the Iraqis hundreds of bases. And we have moved millions of pieces of equipment out of Iraq. This completes a transition to Iraqi responsibility for their own security. U.S. troops pulled out of Iraq's cities last summer, and Iraqi forces have moved into the lead with considerable skill and commitment to their fellow citizens. Even as Iraq continues to suffer terrorist attacks, security incidents have been near the lowest on record since the war began. And Iraqi forces have taken the fight to al-Qaeda, removing much of its leadership in Iraqi-led operations. This year also saw Iraq hold credible elections that drew a strong turnout. A caretaker administration is in place as Iraqis form a government based on the results of that election. Tonight, I encourage Iraq's leaders to move forward with a sense of urgency, to form an inclusive government that is just, representative, and accountable to the Iraqi people. And when that government is in place, there should be no doubt the Iraqi people will have a strong partner in the United States. Our combat mission is ending, but our commitment to Iraq's future is not. Going forward, a transitional force of U.S. troops will remain in Iraq with a different mission, advising and assisting Iraq's security forces, supporting Iraqi troops in targeted counterterrorism missions, and protecting our civilians. Consistent with our agreement with the Iraqi government, all U.S. troops will leave by the end of next year. As our military draws down, our dedicated civilians, diplomats, aid workers, and advisors, are moving into the lead to support Iraq as it strengthens its government, resolves political disputes, resettles those displaced by war, and builds ties with the region and the world. That's a message that Vice President Biden is delivering to the Iraqi people through his visit there today. This new approach reflects our long-term partnership with Iraq, one based upon mutual interest and mutual respect. Of course, violence will not end with our combat mission. Extremists will continue to set off bombs, attack Iraqi civilians, and try to spark sectarian strife. But ultimately, these terrorists will fail to achieve their goals. Iraqis are a proud people. They have rejected sectarian war, and they have no interest in endless destruction. They understand that in the end, only Iraqis can resolve their differences and police their streets. Only Iraqis can build a democracy within their borders. What America can do and will do is provide support for the Iraqi people as both a friend and a partner. Ending this war is not only in Iraq's interest, it's in our own. The United States has paid a huge price to put the future of Iraq in the hands of its people. We have sent our young men and women to make enormous sacrifices in Iraq and spent vast resources abroad at a time of tight budgets at home. We've persevered because of a belief we share with the Iraqi people, a belief that out of the ashes of war, a new beginning could be born in this cradle of civilization. Through this remarkable chapter in the history of the United States and Iraq, we have met our responsibilities. Now, it's time to turn the page. As we do, I'm mindful that the Iraq War has been a contentious issue at home. Here, too, it's time to turn the page. This afternoon, I spoke to former President George W. Bush. It's well known that he and I disagreed about the war from its outset. Yet no one can doubt President Bush's support for our troops or his love of country and commitment to our security. As I've said, there were patriots who supported this war and patriots who opposed it. And all of us are united in appreciation for our servicemen and women and our hopes for Iraqi's future. The greatness of our democracy is grounded in our ability to move beyond our differences and to learn from our experience as we confront the many challenges ahead. And no challenge is more essential to our security than our fight against al-Qaeda. Americans across the political spectrum supported the use of force against those who attacked us on 9/11. Now, as we approach our 10th year of combat in Afghanistan, there are those who are understandably asking tough questions about our mission there. But we must never lose sight of what's at stake. As we speak, Al-Qaeda continues to plot against us, and its leadership remains anchored in the border regions of Afghanistan and Pakistan. We will disrupt, dismantle, and defeat Al-Qaeda while preventing Afghanistan from again serving as a base for terrorists. And because of our drawdown in Iraq, we are now able to apply the resources necessary to go on offense. In fact, over the last 19 months, nearly a dozen Al-Qaeda leaders and hundreds of Al-Qaeda's extremist allies have been killed or captured around the world. Within Afghanistan, I've ordered the deployment of additional troops who, under the command of General David Petraeus, are fighting to break the Taliban's momentum. As with the surge in Iraq, these forces will be in place for a limited time to provide space for the Afghans to build their capacity and secure their own future. But, as was the case in Iraq, we can't do for Afghans what they must ultimately do for themselves. That's why we're training Afghan security forces and supporting a political resolution to Afghanistan's problems. And next August, we will begin a transition to Afghan responsibility. The pace of our troop reductions will be determined by conditions on the ground, and our support for Afghanistan will endure. But make no mistake, this transition will begin, because open-ended war serves neither our interests nor the Afghan peoples. Indeed, one of the lessons of our effort in Iraq is that American influence around the world is not a function of military force alone. We must use all elements of our power, including our diplomacy, our economic strength, and the power of America's example, to secure our interests and stand by our allies. And we must project a vision of the future that's based not just on our fears, but also on our hopes. A vision that recognizes the real dangers that exist around the world, but also the limitless possibilities of our time. Today, old adversaries are at peace, and emerging democracies are potential partners. New markets for our goods stretch from Asia to the Americas. A new push for peace in the Middle East will begin here, tomorrow. Billions of young people want to move beyond the shackles of poverty and conflict. As the leader of the free world, America will do more than just defeat on the battlefield those who offer hatred and destruction. We will also lead among those who are willing to work together to expand freedom and opportunity for all people. Now that effort must begin within our own borders. Throughout our history, America has been willing to bear the burden of promoting liberty and human dignity overseas, understanding its links to our own liberty and security. But we have also understood that our nation's strength and influence abroad must be firmly anchored in our prosperity at home. And the bedrock of that prosperity must be a growing middle class. Unfortunately, over the last decade, we've not done what's necessary to shore up the foundations of our own prosperity. We spent $1 trillion at war, often financed by borrowing from overseas. This, in turn, has shortchanged investments in our own people and contributed to record deficits. For too long, we have put off tough decisions on everything from our manufacturing base to our energy policy to education reform. As a result, too many middle-class families find themselves working harder for less, while our nation's long-term competitiveness is put at risk. And so at this moment, as we wind down the war in Iraq, we must tackle those challenges at home with as much energy and grit and sense of common purpose as our men and women in uniform who have served abroad. They have met every test that they faced. Now it's our turn. Now it's our responsibility to honor them by coming together, all of us, and working to secure the dream that so many generations have fought for. The dream that a better life awaits anyone who is willing to work for it and reach for it. Our most urgent task is to restore our economy and put the millions of Americans who have lost their jobs back to work. To strengthen our middle class, we must give all our children the education they deserve, and all our workers the skills that they need to compete in a global economy. We must jumpstart industries that create jobs and end our dependence on foreign oil. We must unleash the innovation that allows new products to roll off our assembly lines and nurture the ideas that spring from our entrepreneurs. This will be difficult, but in the days to come, it must be our central mission as a people and my central responsibility as president. Part of that responsibility is making sure that we honor our commitments to those who have served our country with such valor. As long as I am president, we will maintain the finest fighting force that the world has ever known. And we will do whatever it takes to serve our veterans as well as they have served us. This is a sacred trust. That's why we've already made one of the largest increases in funding for veterans in decades. We're treating the signature wounds of today's wars, post-traumatic stress disorder, and traumatic brain injury, while providing the health care and benefits that all of our veterans have earned. And we're funding a post-9/11 GI Bill that helps our veterans and their families pursue the dream of a college education. Just as the GI Bill helped those who fought World War II, including my grandfather, become the backbone of our middle class, so today's servicemen and women must have the chance to apply their gifts to expand the American economy. Because part of ending a war responsibly is standing by those who have fought it. You know, 2 weeks ago, America's final combat brigade in Iraq, the Army's 4th Striker Brigade, journeyed home in the pre-dawn darkness. Thousands of soldiers and hundreds of vehicles made the trip from Baghdad, the last of them passing into Kuwait in the early morning hours. Over 7 years before, American troops and coalition partners had fought their way across similar highways. But this time, no shots were fired. It was just a convoy of brave Americans making their way home. Of course, the soldiers left much behind. Some were teenagers when the war began. Many have served multiple tours of duty, far from families who bore a heroic burden of their own, and during the absence of a husband's embrace or a mother's kiss. Most painfully, since the war began, 55 members of the 4th Striker Brigade made the ultimate sacrifice, part of over 4,400 Americans who have given their lives in Iraq. As one staff sergeant said, "I know that to my brothers in arms who fought and died, this day would probably mean a lot." Those Americans gave their lives for the values that have lived in the hearts of our people for over two centuries. Along with nearly 1.5 million Americans who have served in Iraq, they fought in a faraway place for people they never knew. They stared into the darkest of human creations, war, and helped the Iraqi people seek the light of peace. In an age without surrender ceremonies, we must earn victory through the success of our partners and the strength of our own nation. Every American who serves joins an unbroken line of heroes that stretches from Lexington to Gettysburg, from Iwo Jima to Incheon, from Khe Sanh to Kandahar. Americans who have fought to see that the lives of our children are better than our own. Our troops are the steel in our ship of state. And though our nation may be traveling through rough waters, they give us confidence that our course is true and that beyond the pre-dawn darkness, better days lie ahead. Thank you. May God bless you, and may God bless the United States of America and all who serve her.
President Barack Obama speaking live this evening from the Oval Office, seated, in fact, at the very same desk that his predecessor, President Bush, sat at 7 years ago, announcing the beginning of the war in Iraq. This evening, President Obama declaring the end of combat operations there, or at least the end with a coda. Well, right now, I'm joined once again by VOA's White House correspondent Dan Robinson and our senior national correspondent Jim Malone. Gentlemen, to each of you, first to you, Jim, what did you hear this evening?
Well, I heard a president carrying out his presidential responsibilities, and with some special caveats. This was a president who opposed the war in Iraq. This was a political candidate when he ran for office, whose main difference with his main competitor, Hillary Clinton, was that he voted against the war and she voted for it. Mm-hmm. But now he finds himself, as president of the United States, having to wrap up a program in Iraq that was started by his predecessor. He went through that tonight, I thought, in a way that tried to reassure the American public that, mm-hmm. A, we're not leaving Iraq alone, mm-hmm. but that a new chapter is beginning. As he said, we're turning the page. So he wants to make it clear, especially to the American people, I thought, that we have done what we can do right now in terms of helping them security-wise. We're leaving a force behind, but we've got to move on.
Dan Robinson, was it a reassuring message that the president was trying to offer this evening?
I think you saw a confident President Obama in this speech. I mean, this is a president who said repeatedly in the past, he said Americans should not seek to relitigate the origins, right. of the war in Iraq. So here he is basically asking Americans to follow him in this new page, as Jim was referring to. He's also asking, interestingly, when we talk about the Middle East talks that are about to begin this week, I may be jumping ahead on you, mm-hmm. Asking a broader international public to join him and join this country on this new page.
Of course, as he's asking the American public to turn the page, he's also making direct reference to the prices that have been borne by this country, of course, by many countries, but just speaking of this country, as he referred to it, this country bearing the burden of promoting liberty and human dignity overseas, meanwhile also understanding that our nation's strength must be firmly anchored in our prosperity at home. Jim Malone, what are the potential risks that the president has in making this announcement this evening? I mean, is it somewhere between, I mean, it certainly wasn't a mission accomplished address, but it also at the same time did seem to be taking some credit, but there was a bit of a line in there, questioned victory, perhaps.
Yeah, well, he makes a reference to, we're in an age where we're not going to see a lot of,
right.
surrender ceremonies. And, look, the outlook in Iraq is uncertain. Violence continues. Is it less than it was? Absolutely. There seems to be a trajectory of hope there, but there's a lot of work to be done. And, of course, the Iraqis had an election several months ago. They still haven't been able to form a government, so there's lots of questions. This Iraq intervention, this war, had enormous consequences on the Iraqi population. Let's not forget,
absolutely.
We talk about 4,400 Americans, but the estimates are 100,000 Iraqis died. This had terrible consequences in the country, in the region, internationally. We have all that. I thought, though, that for the most part, we heard a president tonight speaking to the American people. And we should also remember that politically, this is a president somewhat under siege right now. He's facing a very difficult congressional election soon. He's not doing well in the polls. And he also brought it around, very interestingly, I thought, to Afghanistan, which is the other war hanging out there that's unresolved.
Dan Robinson, this really, I think, brings up the question of who was this speech meant for? Jim, just saying here, clearly meant for the American public. In what ways do you think this was targeted at the American public?
Well, I mean, one point he said in the speech, he said, all Americans are united. I mean, that was a clear appeal for Americans to recognize again that this page is being turned. We don't want to relitigate the past. I mean, on the question of costs, however, I want to note that he did mention specifically he said $1 trillion spent on war. He didn't say spent on Iraq. He didn't say spent on Afghanistan. I mean, this has been a difficult road for Americans undergoing recession now, for members of Congress who have had to justify this kind of spending. He basically said, look, we've spent enormous amounts on this. Also, on the issue of young people, he did refer to what he called billions of young people who want to leave behind poverty and conflict. That's an appeal overseas directed to the foreign audience.
Doug, you mentioned an uncertain outcome, perhaps. So how does this look?
Right. A qualified victory, perhaps.
This is a war that was extremely divisive in this country. It was very long, third longest, I think I heard today, in our history. Americans want the best outcome possible from it. They want the sacrifice to be worthwhile, because one thing that did come out of it, the country is united in terms of praising the troops, the American troops that fought there. There's no doubt about that. We've heard a lot of talk about that in the American media today. But The issue is, have we bound up the wounds that internally that were caused by the Iraq War? I don't think we have. And I think the president is very much focused now on trying to finish a job in Afghanistan that looks quite a bit more difficult right now than even getting to the place we are in Iraq. So he's got a lot going on.
Well, you mentioned a war, the third longest war. Well, here's a war that's lasted longer, and that is the war, the U.S. operations in Afghanistan. To what degree, first to you, Dan, do you think that the war in Afghanistan both figures on Americans' radar screens at this point and also is something that they continue to be willing to shed precious resources for, both in terms of money and in terms of lives?
Well, I mean, he attempted in this speech, and I think he was successful to the greatest degree, and has done before this speech, to say, look, we don't want open-ended conflict in Afghanistan. He made clear again that the pace of any U.S. drawdown in Afghanistan will be determined, as military officials have stressed, on conditions on the ground. So, I mean, he's made that case strongly, but you face a difficult situation. I mean, possible instability in Iraq, it's possible that will happen. And Afghanistan, we all know, is very difficult.
One of the issues here is, and it's right in the speech, although he does talk about wanting to start, you know, taking into account conditions on the ground in Afghanistan a year from now, he also uses the Iraq example as we cannot fight these wars endlessly.
Right.
This is a man who came into office primarily on this point. And this is where some of the critics have a problem with President Obama. John McCain has a piece in the newspaper today arguing, you know, how can you be saying, you know, we may be pulling out from Afghanistan in a year, and yet we're putting all these troops in now to try to sort the situation out. So this gives his critics fodder. One other point here, and I think this is important. He knows he's under siege also in the domestic side because of the state of the American economy. And Democrats may take a huge beating in November based on that. He, again, uses a foreign policy speech to weave that into the speech. It's very important because he knows that's the number one thing in the minds of all Americans right now.
And given that, the president and, of course, his press secretary, Robert Gibbs, the White House, is setting up this speech, has tried to pivot from the victory in Iraq, the ending of combat missions there, perhaps a bit of a foreshadowing for Afghanistan, and then that pivot, to use the president's word, time to rebuild our nation here at home. Jim Malone, first to you, are Americans buying it?
Well, look, the polls show Americans are tired of the wars. This is an important point. They do not want to lose the wars. They want them to the efforts to succeed. But these wars have gone on a long time. Certainly, there was tremendous fatigue about the situation in Iraq. And now that Afghanistan seems to be looking even tougher, there are worries about holding public support there. So he knows people want results at home first. These wars can be a distraction in terms of trying to rebuild the economy.
I just wanted to make a point. The stress, there were two mentions of former President George W. Bush, as Jim mentioned, on the initiation of hostilities in Iraq, and the second time where the President Obama noted strong disagreement with the former president on this. He talked to him on the phone today. This is part of the effort to appeal for unity as we move forward. The other thing is, on the domestic political situation, he's going to get continuing strong criticism from Republicans. He also faces problems from the left in his party, who are very, very cautious about what we're approaching in Afghanistan.
Only a few moments left, and if I can, I'm going to put you on the spot and ask you to play historian for just a moment. For each of you, and first to you, Jim Malone, is Iraq President Bush's war or President Obama's war?
I don't think there's any question the way a lot of the historians have already talked. It will go down as President George W. Bush's war. President Obama was the man who handed the keys over at the end.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, President Obama is seeing a close to this, at least of combat operations, but maintaining that we will remain committed to the cause generally for Iraqis.
Well, gentlemen, thank you so much. Senior National Correspondent Jim Malone and White House Correspondent Dan Robbins, thank you so much for being with us. And I'd like to thank you for being with us, whether you joined us by radio, television, or the web, for this special coverage of President Obama's address on the war in Iraq. Now, if you missed any part of tonight's live coverage, you can visit us at www.com. www.voanews.com. There you'll find full text of the address, analysis, and reaction from around the world. Well, that is all for us, from us this evening. Thanks so much for joining us. From Washington, I'm Doug Bernard.